How would you like to grow your business the easy way? And in my humble opinion, the fun way, through speaking. Yes, you can literally speak your way to more business, and we can show you how. You know, when I started my coaching business 15 years ago, I struggled making only $900 in the first 2 years. Yeah, you heard that right. Less than $1,000 in 2 years. The problem? I was busy running around to networking events and handing out business cards, trying to help everyone, you know, everyone. Then I took the stage for the first time in my life and began speaking and teaching about the strategies I coached on. And when I really got my message dialed in, my business went literally from 3 figures a year to 7 figures. The secret I finally realized is that when you take the stage, you instantly become seen as the leading voice in your niche or industry. Today, we show entrepreneurs just like you and just like I was how to dominate your niche by becoming the leading voice, not just another expert. We run an incredible business mastermind speaker training program. It's called The Leading Voice. You guessed it. If you head over to leadingvoiceplatform.com/podcast and grab my free roadmap, 8 pillars to profitable speaking. This free roadmap outlines the exact 8 secret weapons you need to truly become the leading voice in your niche. This is exclusively for my podcast listeners. You go to leadingvoiceplatform.com/podcast and start speaking your way to more business.
Speaking of getting booked, this podcast is about one thing:
getting booked to speak more. Whether you are an established speaker or a newbie, we want to see your career take off.
Hundreds of speakers are hired every single day.
And you are next.
Let's jump in with your host, Matt Browning.
Hey, what's going on, speakers, entrepreneurs, my friends, my colleagues? So glad to be back with you this week. This week, you know, there's a lot going on. It's a busy, busy week. It's a busy season coming up. And I know that you want to get out on stage more. So let's just cut straight to the chase and let's jump in to a very interesting interview with someone who is an international speaker, speaks all over the place, basically lives in hotels and travels. If you are wanting that lifestyle of just a traveling entrepreneur who has freedom from a day job and speaks as often as you want, not too much, but as often as you want, and make the world your stage, this is the person to listen to. Let's jump in with Mike Wolf. He's a self-made freedom lifestyle entrepreneur, and he truly embodies that. I've known Mike for quite a few years now. Gosh, I don't even know when we met, at least 5, 6 years, maybe longer. Maybe he can jog my memory. He's a multimillionaire investor and international speaker. So he's been investing in real estate for almost 30 years, and he helps people to get their dreams of that same lifestyle of freedom by teaching strategies to get different kinds of passive income, and not the gimmicky passive income, the real passive income, like having a rental property that it makes you money, like having other types of automation in your life and business. Mike's been featured in The Globe and Mail, various print publications, radio stations, of course, you know, and other places like NBC, CBS, and ABC News, Yahoo Finance. He's sold nearly 2,000 homes, and over 800 of them are in the Atlanta area, so he knows and loves that area very much for investment. He created something really cool with Turnkey Solutions that or allowing new investors the opportunity to become self-made millionaires, but without having to know the market as well in an area. He actually knows it for you. It's phenomenal. He's also a leading authority on helping you non-US citizens, because he's from Canada? Just kidding. It's from Canada, but he's a Canadian, helping non-US citizens invest in the hottest markets in the United States. That's where he spends most of his time. Mike, welcome to the show. How are you, my friend?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Dude, so glad that you made the time to be here. I know you're a busy dude. You're in New Orleans right now on Bourbon Street, making time for a podcast.
I'm on New Orleans, and actually I'm glad that it's quiet, because quite often I thought, and it sounds like a great idea to have a balcony overlooking Bourbon Street, but not when you're doing podcasts. So luckily it's quiet right now.
Yeah, so let's see if we can get this podcast through before the party start. So Mike, first off, what did you start doing first? Did you start doing real estate first, or did you start speaking first? Because I know you've been doing both for a long time.
Yeah, no, I got into real estate long before I got into speaking. Matter of fact, I was terrified to speak early on in my real estate career. but my real estate actually led to me getting speaking gigs. I wasn't even looking for a speaking gig originally. And when I started investing in the US as a Canadian, I won't mention their name, but a really big prestigious real estate investment training company calls me out of the blue and says, "Hey, we're looking for a Canadian who's been investing in the US. And your name keeps coming up. Could you come speak for us?" And I had never been on a stage before. And so I went from never speaking on a stage to speaking like in front of 500 people. So yeah, I was very terrified. But
what year was that? How long ago?
This would have been probably about 17, 18 years ago now.
Wow, 17, 18 years. So I'm just trying to do the math in my head. Oh,
you weren't even born yet. You weren't born yet. So
Hey. if only. Now I'm starting to, kids that age that were born then, they can be my kids now. It's kind of weird. For quite a while, you got into that not intending to speak. So I want to talk about your speaking career. I want to talk about your travel lifestyle. I think if you're listening to this, you want to know Mike, because one of the biggest things that you do is you're all about freeing up and figuring out a system over here so that you can do what you want to do over there. It's like,
correct.
And this is, in pardon my skepticism, but you know, I've known you for a long time. You know me, so I'm going to cut to the chase. I'm a super big skeptic about anything like that. That's like, oh, free yourself up and automate, you know, Tim Ferriss 4-hour work week, and the guy works 80 hours or however he works. What was the first thing? Was it all real estate? Are there other aspects of that?
Well,
what's your take on freeing yourself up, quote unquote, so that you can do what you want?
Well, first of all, you know, I agree. A lot of people are skeptical, and they should be, because there is a lot of crap out there. But, you know, I remember posting something about passive income once on my Facebook page, and somebody said, "Passive income, does that even really exist?" And so, to give you an idea, there's people that are dead making more money than both of us put together by far. Like, think of Michael Jackson or Elvis Presley, who went in the studio one time. Well, I mean, they went in more than one time, but they went in, recorded an album, and it's still making the money while they're not even here. So there's numerous ways to create passive income. For me, real estate's been my favorite one. You buy a property. Well, first, let's define passive income. It's really doing something. It's doing something one time and getting paid for it over and over and over. And so when you own rental properties, for example, and you if you have somebody else that's collecting the rent for you, then you know, after you've bought it, this is a gift that keeps on giving. It gives you a paycheck, you know, at the end of every single month. And so now, obviously, not everybody can just go out and buy a whole ton of rental properties. You know, you have to basically create a little bit of wealth first, typically. But I basically specialize in creating passive income. And if you would have known me like 15 years ago, I used to be a workaholic, and I've now become a playaholic. And so I've had to do certain things in my businesses, like, you know, build teams and put systems in place so that the teams know what they're doing. But it's absolutely possible to create a lifestyle where you get to do pretty much what you want every single day, if you have the right, you know, fundamentals in place. And so, you know, these things don't happen overnight, but certainly if I could build it, anybody else could build it too.
Well, I like how you said that, because, you know, guys, if you're new to this show and you don't know me that well, you don't know Mike that well, you just met him, but I can tell you he's one of the most genuine guys you will ever meet. Not just because he's Canadian and extra nice, but he's just a super genuine guy. And Mike, I want to say too, do you know how long we've known each other? I don't remember what year.
Oh boy, I think it's probably been about 5, 6, 7-ish years would be my best guess. But I think
somewhere in that range. But I'll say this about you: is you're like the Paul Rudd of entrepreneurs and speakers. Where we were hearing an interview once, someone said, "Everyone hates someone in Hollywood, but nobody doesn't like Paul Rudd."
Right. Yeah,
he's just the most genuine, nice guy. And I've never once, not once, ever heard from, and I have students of mine that are your clients. I've never heard one person say an ill word about you. And I can't say that for virtually any other speaker.
Oh, thank you.
You have a reputation that that precedes you. And so that's why if someone's going to talk about passive income, I want it to be you. So we look at real estate, you look at other pieces in the business. I want to come back to that, but let's jump into some of your speaking and we'll circle back around. How did your first gig come about? How did they find you? Do you have any idea where you were? Well, you didn't go after them, but they came after you.
Well, here's a funny thing. Yeah. Here's the funny thing is that this all happened. Let me think about it. That was actually around See, I'm really bad with dates. That would have happened right around the beginning of the recession. And so what was happening is
which recession?
That big one where everybody lost all their money around 2007-ish. So I haven't been speaking as long as I thought. Yeah. So anyway, I remember when I first started as a Canadian investing on this side of the border in the U.S., all my friends thought I was nuts. And it all started because I had a friend move from Canada to Las Vegas, and I'd go visit him. And I don't have an addiction to what most people have when they go to, I don't gamble. I'm not, a huge drinker. But I am addicted, especially in those days, to going and looking at open houses. If I go to any city, I've got to go look at real estate. It's just,
that's the addiction.
Right. So this is prior to the recession. I remember going there and every time I go to Vegas, the prices kept going up and up and up. And that's because all the people in Southern California were moving to Vegas to lower their cost of living. And so I decided, hey, this is like too easy. So I started buying homes in Vegas and all my friends thought I was nuts because homes in Vegas were more expensive than Calgary, where I'm from. The Canadian dollar was like super weak. So then you add on top of it, another 35% for the exchange. All my friends thought I had totally lost my mind. And then when I managed to make a lot of money there, all of a sudden my friends started to come to me and ask, how do you, especially when the recession kicked in. Now the Canadian dollar shot up, the prices in Vegas, tumbled, and everybody, all my friends started asking, well, how do we buy, US properties? And so I was getting quite well known, especially in real estate circles in Canada, as being the Canadian guy who knew how to invest in the US. And so when this company called me, they had talked to a few other people. And, back then, later on after the recession, it became really popular for Canadians to invest in the US. But prior to the recession, I didn't know anybody else who was doing it. And so I was kind of the go-to guy at least in certain parts of Canada for if you wanted to invest in the US, you didn't know how. And so when this call came in, they said, well, we spoke to a bunch of people and everybody's mentioning you. And so I was actually terrified to speak. I had no aspiration to do it. The only reason I did it is actually, one of my heroes ran this company. He's one of the people I looked up to in the real estate world. And it's pretty hard to say no to that. And so to make a long story short, I kind of forced myself to say yes. And that was the beginning of my speaking career, but
let me pull out one of those principles you mentioned though. So when we hear that story of getting that first gig, and we could take that and say that's your 100th gig or your 1,000th gig. If you're listening and you want to get booked more and have someone come after you, what I'm hearing from Mike is there isn't actually a shortcut necessarily. It's like, there's cold calling. Yeah, there's kind of hustling and all that stuff. But there isn't that shortcut where if you just become the name out there, and it takes time and it takes some elbow grease and it takes you really being a go-to expert for something. And something specific. He wasn't just a real estate person, because how many real estate people are there in the world? But he got really well known because he was helping Canadians invest in the US. So it was a chunk down or a detail of real estate. And for me, it was like I wasn't just speaking in personal development. I was speaking with NLP applied to personal development, or NLP applied to speaking. And what would happen is because I help people, because I put on my own trainings, because I showed up in groups and chats and social media, and because I kept, I help people and they came through my trainings. Eventually what happens is like I'd see the same thing Mike did, but now, 10 years later in the social world, someone posts says, hey, I'm looking for a speaker coach, or I'm looking for an NLP trainer. And all of a sudden my name might get mentioned 1, 2, or 3 times in the same thread. And I'm sure this is kind of the version of, while that guy's calling places and emailing, talking to people, people keep coming back with Mike Wolf. One of the ways to get booked is just get known in your niche of a niche, in your specific niche. Like, did you take off immediately after that and say, you know what? This was scary as all heck, but it was really fun. I want to do a bunch more of this. Did you see the money on the wall? Like, ooh, I could speak in addition to everything else? Or did you think you wouldn't do it again at all, and then it kind of kept knocking on your door? What was the story continuing?
Well, with this, it wasn't a one-time gig. They basically wanted me to tour like across Canada and be a guest speaker at a whole bunch of events. So
wow.
So I had no choice but to literally, I probably spoke for them like several dozen times. And so I actually, each time I spoke, I got a little bit more confident, and got to the point where I actually started to enjoy it. I realized at first I felt like the first time I did it, I felt like I was like sweating profusely and stuttering, and I felt like I totally bombed. But then after I had done it, people were coming up to me and going, wow, I mean, that was so amazing and I learned so much. And so I realized that even though in my mind I was like terrified, nobody else knew I was terrified. And so, but each time I just got a little bit more confident with it. And now I actually love speaking. I love to teach people from the stage and be able to, try to inspire as many people as possible. But it took me getting out of my own way and getting out of my comfort zone to get to that point.
So you went on kind of tour. You know, what's funny is you and I had something real similar in common. So as you're touring around in Australia or in Canada, I'm touring around in Australia. My first big speaking gig after I tried and tried on my own was with this company in Australia. And my first one was 400 people. And they put on these 4-day events kind of almost every month or every other month, all different cities. And I basically came on as this mindset NLP speaker. And I spoke at every one of their events. And I didn't know what I was doing. How did you, I don't know, like calm the nerves? Did you take more training? Did you just keep on practicing and being willing to suck? Did you have a certain mindset, or what was your approach to getting better once you knew that you were going to do this more?
Well, the interesting thing was that, like, in my mind, even to this day, I don't really feel like one of those really polished professional speakers. I just speak from the heart. And for me, that worked really well because, one of the things I'll say about Canadians, and I think Australians too, definitely New Zealanders, because I've spoken in New Zealand, is we tend to be more reserved. And we don't, if we see somebody that's overly, over polished, overdone, we don't tend to trust them. And so it actually worked out pretty good for me that I just spoke from the heart. And I was talking about a topic that I was very familiar with. So that was a good part. I wasn't talking about something that I had to research or that was foreign to me. And so I was always confident in that part. And I think my biggest fear was everybody's got that fear that they don't want to speak in front of a crowd. But I think my biggest fear at first was that somebody would ask me a question that I couldn't answer. And then I realized after doing this over and over and over, every question they asked me, I knew the answer to. But I also learned that, hey, even if I didn't, there'd be no harm in saying, hey, you know what? I don't know the answer to that. I'll get back to you, or refer them to somebody else who may be an expert in that particular, area that they ask a question on. And so, but to me, I have taken some speaker trainings more along the lines of, not so much the actual, how do you present better, but more, how do you get booked on more stages, or how do you monetize it better, more the marketing side of things. But I think I developed kind of, if you want to call it skills, I think more organically just from doing it over and over and seeing what resonated and what connected, and also watching a lot of other speakers and watching them and seeing what kind of connects with me when I see them speak and what doesn't connect.
Do you want to speak more? I know it's become something that you started really loving. When you travel, do you mostly travel to speak, or do you mostly travel for real estate, combining both of them? What is a year in your calendar look like usually? What drives you in the new places?
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I don't do as much speaking as I used to because I've got two grandsons now. And so they're obviously very important in my life.
I've been watching the pictures on Facebook, man. And they're cute as...
Are they adorable?
Oh my gosh.
I'm very proud grandpa. So
they take after their grandma, I'm sure.
There you go. when I travel these days, I do a lot of it for fun. Also to do humanitarian projects. And occasionally, somebody asks me to speak, I'll speak on their stage if it's a friend of mine or whatnot. But I don't commit to, Canada-wide tours anymore or anything like that. It's just more one-off sort of presentations. And I do my own events a couple of times a year. I actually stopped doing them when my daughter first got pregnant. I actually stopped doing all my events, all my speaking, just to be, there to support her. But actually, one of my students who got a really smoking deal, one of the things I teach is a strategy in real estate called tax deeds. And so I had stopped doing that training, and one of my students got this really good deal at the auction. He got a home for $7,200 and shot a video. And he's got a really big following. He shot a video saying, I want to give a shout out to my mentor, Mike Wolf. And I had dozens of people saying, hey, when's your next event? When's your next event? And so after taking like a two and a half year break, I did my first event last year in a while. And when I was up on the stage, I realized how much I miss it and how much I really enjoy just teaching and helping other people. So I've started doing it a little bit more as of late, but not like I used to. I always want to have time for the grandkids. And so my travel a lot of times is just to recharge the batteries or humanitarian stuff to give back. And occasionally it's speaking, but mostly fun these days.
I love that. So you mentioned your event that you put on now that you took a 2.5, almost 3 year sabbatical for the family. When you decide to put on an event, and we can talk about any of them, the one coming up or your first one or any in between, what are some of the principles you follow? Because I think the biggest question that we'll have a lot of speakers is, I teach that it's really smart to speak, but also to put on your own events. And sometimes it works both, where having your own event can get you booked to speak, right? True. We do, you know, you've seen the stage trading where friends of ours, you know, mutual friends, we always do that. And it's not about brokering stages, but it's, you can go to someone instead of begging, saying, hey, can you put me on? Can you pay me to speak? Can I have a chance to sell whatever it is? You can go to them and say, hey, I have a stage. Come to my event. It's a wonderful thing. And we can be on each other's stages. So the problem, though, is usually filling the room. Sometimes content, sometimes, you know, how are you going to do that? But mostly it's paying for the event, getting the room filled, selling tickets. Can you give us an idea of, like, after all the different events you've put on, from meetups to high-end, you know, retreats, what's the model you go with now? How do you fill your room? So where do most people come from? And then feel free to break down any other details you're comfortable breaking down as far as whether it's ticket cost or upsells or anything at all. I'd love to have a window into how you do successful events as a speaker.
Yeah, so my events tend to be more small, intimate events, and they're higher tickets. So for example, I've got one coming up here, and it's all about, you know, in my opinion, the easiest ways to make money. If I was starting fresh, knowing, you know, I've been doing real estate for almost 30 years. So if I knew 30 years ago what I know now, what would I do to get that first, you know, deal under my belt really quickly? So I'll be teaching things like the tax deeds and foreclosures. And I'm also bringing in some friends. One of them that teaches how do you make, he's a multi-million dollar seller on Amazon. So he's going to be teaching his strategies. And I'm bringing a couple of guest speakers. So it's a high ticket item. It's $8,000. I'm not trying to get 100 people in the room. I'm only trying to get, you know, maximum of 20. That's where I cap it off at. And usually I can fill that just by sending out to my email list. And just, you know, I create what we call a campaign where, you know, I just do a bunch of value videos where we're not trying to sell anything. So I'll just talk about, hey, this is what a tax deed is. Here's kind of the beginning things of what you do to do one of these. And here's how a foreclosure works. And here's why you can get properties for pennies on the dollar. And I'll be interviewing my friend about Amazon and doing a little podcast with him. And so just, you know, giving some tidbits of information, getting people excited about the topics, showing that obviously we know what we're doing and then we'll send out we'll start sending out emails inviting people to attend. And because I don't do the events that often, usually they sell out very, very quickly. And so, so that's how I do it. But if I were going back in time and I had, you know, these days, like I said, I'm pretty comfortable. If I was hungry again, I would probably do a whole bunch of meetups. I go on meetup.com, set up my own meetups, try and get on other people's meetup groups.
How would you try to get on other people's meetup groups?
Well, what I find is that there's a lot of people out there that have meetup groups, and they'd be happy to have a guest speaker because it's usually only them that's speaking each and every time. You know, people like you and I, we're you know, we put on meetups. I don't know if you do one, but if you do, I know you do it to monetize and to sell tickets and your events, et cetera, as do I. But there's a lot of people that just do it. You know, for example, there's people that want to talk about real estate with other people that are interested in real estate. But they just have little get-togethers, and it's just kind of the same thing month after month. And so if you say, hey, you know what, I've been on, you know, this TV station, I've got this book, et cetera, you're a celebrity to them. And, you know, quite often they're extremely happy to have you there. And quite often they don't care if you sell or not. And even if you don't, you can give away something for free to show, you know, to get people, you know, seeing some of your stuff and getting your stuff in front of them. And then, you know, you can do an offer outside of the meetup group if necessary. So, but it's quite easy. And there's so many, at least, I mean, in the real estate world, there's so many, you know, real estate clubs and meetup groups. And it's super, if I wanted to do a cross country tour, I'm sure I could, you know, speak 100 days in a row if I really wanted to. So,
I'll bet you could.
So the possibilities are there. And then on top of it, you know, here's a little tip for your listeners is don't just set up meetup groups in the city that you live in. You know, I have meetup groups in, you know, most of the major cities in North America. So if I were to go, I don't live in Toronto. If I were to go to Toronto tomorrow, I've got a really big following there waiting for me to go put on a meetup. I have the meetup group, but I don't do live events that often there. So, but I have that, you know, major centers. And so if there's certain places where you plan on being, maybe you're on vacation, you're going to go on vacation to, I don't know, let's say you're going to Florida to go to Disney World. Well, set up a meetup group there. And while you're there, put on an event, and now you can write it off in addition to being able to make some money to pay for Disney. So
it's a legit write-off because you're traveling for work, which I love. What about, and it's funny, so you've done meetups. I mean, how many cities do you think you've put on your own meetups around the world, if you had to guess?
Oh boy, you know, I have a bunch of meetup groups and I haven't necessarily put on events in a lot of those places, but.
So you have meetup groups through Meetup in a city that, let's say you haven't actually done a meetup yet, but you have that to gain following. And if you do want to do one, is that right?
Yeah. One day it just popped in my mind that that seemed like a really good idea. So I had one, you know, I had one in Calgary where I lived, and I had one in Vegas where I started my US real estate investing career.
Makes sense.
And then I started to put them in like Vancouver and Toronto and Los Angeles and different cities. But it got to a point, like I said, once my daughter, you know, got pregnant, for example, where it's like, I didn't really feel like doing it anymore. I felt like working less. And you know, I've had that general trend for quite a while where, you know, I've created more passive income. And as you kind of get used to passive income and money, you know, you wake up and you have more money in your bank account than when you went to bed without having to trade your time for it. You start to get a little bit lazy. But when I took that hiatus from speaking, and then I spoke again for that first time in a while, I realized how much I missed it. And so one of these days I might actually go and actually go to some of these cities and just put on a small event here and there. So
yeah, I know how you feel too with the you said hungry, and it's like, I want to make sure, you know, people get that. You and I started speaking pretty close to the same time. And I have a real estate background as well. I used to have my own broker shop, and you know that, and
yeah,
flipping and everything. And I'm just now getting back into real estate. So it's exciting to reconnect with you on this. But you know, at one point I was putting on meetups in 18 cities and three countries, New Zealand, Australia, and then the US, and put, you know, 9 cities in the US all over the place. And what started, you know, in the beginning, it's like, listen, if you're hungry, if you have more time than money, if you are wanting more gigs, like there's no faster way to get a speaking gig than to make your own dang stage. Like put on a meetup. And I don't care if there's 3 people, 30 people exactly. Come up. The more you nurture it, the more you do that, the more valuable it is to people, then the more they're going to come. But, you know, I can't tell you how frustrating it is, Mike, when I hear, you know, a speaker, okay, I got the advice from Matt. I'm going to put on a meetup. Awesome. And then they don't watch my video training. They just put on a meetup and then, you know, 8 people register and 2 people show up and they're like, oh, meetups suck. I can't, like, what's the point of this? It's too much work. You have to be willing to act, like, see it through and continuously give value. And when someone joins, you know, send a message saying hello. So there's a lot of work that you can do into that. You can outsource that eventually and whatnot. But like when it comes to building something, you do the work up front. Absolutely. But as Mike said, it's really easy also. It's like it can get tiring. And after a while, I'm not like a snob or anything, but I'm probably not nowadays going to go show up to a room of 12 people or 3 people like I used to. In 2006, I'd show up to, you know, any room. I show up to my grandma's retirement room and just speak to her. I don't care, you know, I'm ready to go. But we do need to start leveraging after a little while. And what I love about Mike is you have done both. You've been slowly retiring yourself, you know, back in the day over time. So you don't have to do this. And then you get to speaking exactly. to someone who would like to be in that space. I think there's going to be a lot of people right now. You might relate to this. You're still feeling like you're in the hustle and you love speaking and you want to speak and you want to build your business, but you're still doing it because you need to eat and pay rent or pay your mortgage. And that's the speaking fees and the selling programs, product services are going to pay for stuff like that. Mike, where do I start if I want to kind of get out from that maze, so to speak, and I want to start to leverage my time a little bit? And I'm telling you, no matter what level we're at, you know, I do pretty well in our business every year. But I'm still in the place where if I shut down, if I stop the cogs, I'm the cog in the wheel, so to speak, you know?
Right, right.
How does someone like me or anyone at any level, how do we start getting outside of that? And like, what's the first couple steps?
Well, if I was starting from scratch right now, One, I might not be like, I started off, obviously I was a full-time real estate investor and I was in the trenches and finding deals and all that stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that. I loved it when I was younger. I wouldn't want to be doing that now. That was quite the hustle. If I was fresh out of school right now, I would take advantage of the fact that we have the internet and that instead of speaking on, I would continue to speak on stages because there's nothing, you know, I think it's so intimate being in front of a group of people live and being able to, you know, inspire them and see the light bulbs go off in their head as you teach. I love that. And there's no substitute for that. However, you know, there's obviously a huge market out there with putting your best stuff out on YouTube and, you know, having, I'm not an expert at the tech stuff, but I have teams that help build out my marketing funnels for me so that we can get out the message in a much bigger way, you know, to people who otherwise would never find us. And so, you know, if we look back in time, that speaking was really good. I did a lot of business from being on those stages. But as time went on, I learned that, you know, also taking my speaking and putting it on, you know, being on people's podcasts like yours. Thank you very much. You know, being on YouTube and putting your content out there, getting that into the world. You know, having your an online course, for example, that once again makes you money while you're sleeping. And it's all about doing having leverage, doing stuff as little as possible and repurposing it, for example. So when I shoot videos, I scrape the audio that, you know, one day that will be a podcast and one day I can get all those videos and podcasts transcribed and that could be a book or blogs. So it's a matter of making the stuff that you do, making it go as far as possible so that you're not trading all that time and doing the same things over and over and over again. And so, but the other thing I would do is I would definitely invest in real estate. I just wouldn't necessarily be the person who goes out and, you know, cold calling and door knocking and trying to find deals and trying to find buyers and sellers and chase after tenants. But I would definitely invest in real estate. And that's why I'm not trying to do some shameless self-promotion here, but...
Oh, no, I actually was going to ask you if you could plug something because you actually have a masterclass about investing in real estate.
Yeah. And- so yeah, we'll give that to your people for free, of course. But I actually have a turnkey operation in Atlanta, which means that my teams have already gone, bought the properties, fixed them. We put tenants in place and we got our management team that looks after them. We sell this to investors from all over the world, and you don't have to be an expert at real estate. You don't have to, you don't have to go look for any, you know, deals. You don't have to build teams. It's all done for you. And so what I would do, I would make as much money as possible doing the stuff that, that you're passionate about, that you're good at, things that you're gifted at, that you're put on this planet to do, but then make your money work as hard for you as possible. So you don't have to work as hard anymore. And, you know, people who don't invest in real estate, the one thing I know about them is they're paying too much tax as well. Because you get to depreciate your properties against your income. So if you're making a lot of money speaking or selling online courses, if you invest in real estate, you get to keep a lot more of that. So if you look at somebody like Warren Buffett, he openly admits that he pays less tax as a percentage than his assistant does. And I don't know how much his assistant makes, but I know he's a billionaire and I'm sure the assistant isn't. So
whatever the numbers are, there's one, yeah, or one's less.
But all the richest people on the planet, they buy real estate to basically, even if they didn't make their money in real estate, they use it to keep more of their money. And so that's what I would do.
Every single one of them.
Yeah. Monetize what you do and then make your money work hard for you. And real estate's the best way, in my opinion, to do that.
And I'm glad you brought up the turnkey idea, because one of the reasons that people would want to stay away from it is, well, I don't know the market. Like, it's one person almost feeling like it's a crapshoot where they're going, well, I hope this house works out. I hope it appreciates. I hope I can find a tenant. What if I can't get it rented for the right amount? I need to fix it and flip it, or I need to rehab something. Where do I start? I don't have all that kind of stuff. And again, there's a lot of real estate people, guys, listen, like there's a lot of real estate people and stock people and trading people that reach out virtually every day to be interviewed and come on one of my podcasts. Cause you know, the shows have a lot of traction because of you, you know, cause you're listening to this and you're subscribed and everything and you've rated it and reviewed it, which I appreciate. But because of that, people want to be on. Mike, you're the only real estate guy I've had on so far. And the reason is I know multiple people, students and friends, who say, oh yeah, I invested with Mike Wolf. And the neat thing is to have done over 800 properties in Atlanta. And I know there's some other areas you do and whatnot, but really to have a hub centered What that means is you know that town and that micro market better than anybody. And to be able to say, hey, here's a little bit of money or credit or both or however you got to work out. I know you got different options, but here's something that I want this money to work for me and to have the house done. It's already fixed. You know, are you going to get like the underneath deal? How does pricing work with that? You know, my only hesitation on the surface, and I know this probably isn't founded, but on the surface, one of my hesitations to doing a deal like that would be, yeah, well, that means you found a sweet deal like under market and then fixed it up and you're going to profit and then I'm going to buy it at retail. And that's probably not necessarily true, but that's what would go through my head, if that makes sense. So I might think, well, I want to go on my own rather than go through a company that already has it dialed in for me because it might be more, quote, profitable. What's the truth in that? And does that question make sense?
It makes total sense. And so when you're buying revenue properties, it's all about a return on investment. And so the more important question isn't how much am I making? The more important question is, what is it going to do for you? So for example, if I inherited a property and got it for free, that would be no different than if I overpaid for a property. So if you're looking for somebody who's losing money on a deal just to make you happy, that's not the right way to do it. The proper way to look at it is that we're buying properties in bulk. So we buy from the banks typically, you know, 20, 30, 40 homes at a time.
And so we're paying much more than I can't do.
We're doing something that most people don't have the ability to do. And then on top of it, you know, when we buy homes, we don't go to the carpet store and buy, you know, carpet for one home. We own thousands of yards of carpet, thousands of gallons of paint, hundreds of appliances.
Wow.
Our cost on everything is way, way, way lower than what you would pay. So by the time you've bought the property, it's already been fixed. Everything comes with a 1-year warranty. We've got tenants already in there. And so
it's the same thing with tenants. You have tenants in bulk because with so many properties, you know,
exactly.
Well, you're looking for tenants and you're having tenants apply constantly and you just plug and play into whatever property is available versus me trying to do a Craigslist ad or something, right?
Right. And so, and one of the other challenges you would have if you try to do this on your own is if you try to invest in your own backyard, like if you're living in places like California, it's ridiculous. The numbers don't work in most markets. You have to find a market that makes sense. And Atlanta is an amazing market. If people watch that masterclass, they'll find out why. But one of the challenges you face is when you're investing outside of where you live, you know, trying to build a good team where you live is challenging enough. But expecting people to actually show up when you're not there and looking over them and babysitting them, getting your contractors to show up, good luck. So even if you found a house at a better, if you're lucky enough to find a house at a better price, your contractors are going to rip you off. Your property managers are going to rip you off. Your tenants are going to take the advantage of the fact that you're an absentee landlord. So, you know, in the long run, it ends up costing you a lot more stress, a lot more time, a lot more money. And with this, it's all done for you. And like I said, we get good enough deals that we can still afford to sell to you at a good price. So
we still get a good price. And again, like the thing I think about too is I got to remember that when I'm looking at, I told you, you know, we're buying our next house right now in the Grand Rapids area. And I look at that as, hey, if we don't live here much longer, you know, if we moved in a year or two or whatever it is, it's a perfect rental property, but I'm looking at it as, does it cash flow? And it's like right. A stock with a dividend. You know, people are freaking out just recently as we record this, the stock market took a big dive with Trump's China initiatives or the tariffs and everything. And people, oh my gosh, my stock's worth less. Well, it's not unless you sell it.
Right.
If stock goes up, stock goes down. My question is, what's the dividend they give you? What's the percentage of profit? And rental property should be the exact same thing. I'm sure you'd agree with that.
Exactly. And that's really what it comes down to. And that's a great thing about real estate is one, you know, every month it gives you a paycheck if you do things right. You've got a tenant in there that's paying.
I like that.
So it gives you that monthly cash flow every single month. Then you've got appreciation as the property goes up. And that's how you truly get wealthy in this business. But you know, between that and that cash flow comes in every month, the cash flow gives you your lifestyle. And then you get the tax benefits of owning real estate. Those are designed, you know, very specifically to help rich people get richer and also retain their wealth. And you can tell the laws around that were designed by rich people. And I'm grateful for that. And so, you know, one of the things I encourage listeners to do is you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Look at what the smartest, what the richest people on the planet are doing and, you know, emulate it because they can afford to hire the best accountants, the best lawyers, and they know the, you know, the how to take advantage of things legally, by the way. We're not talking any gray area here, but how to take advantage of the things that are out there in the tax code that actually are beneficial. And real estate has better benefits than anything else that I know of that you can invest in. And if I found something that was better, I would switch immediately. But there's no other investment that gives you that cash flow every month where you get that appreciation. You don't have to sell the investment to get that money, that paycheck every month. And at the end of the year, you get to keep so much more of what you make. So it's just such a big bonus.
Well, I love this. And I think we did pretty well, Mike, in covering kind of both avenues, some of the speaking, you know, how you're getting booked more, putting on your own events. And then to me, probably most importantly, is just I love what you've created for you is this investment business that frees you up that, I mean, you speak as much or as little as you want. You put on events. You decide to stop putting on events because your grandkids are born. Now they're out there and you know, let me put this back on again, but let me do it on my terms. Let me do an $8,000 ticket. Let me do a smaller intimate event, you know, where I can pour into you can do this the way you want it because your expenses are not tied to your speaking success. So I think that's so important. Mike, thanks for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me, buddy.
Back on. Guys, you can follow. Well, Mike, thanks so much. I'm going to plug you right now. Is that okay?
Oh, please do.
There we go. Thanks, Mike. All right, guys, you can follow Mike on Facebook and LinkedIn. LinkedIn is MikeWolf9 and Facebook is Mike.Wolf.986. There's probably a few wolves out there. Mike.Wolf.986. Just look for Mike Wolf, the real estate investor, real estate guru, Mike Wolf Mastery on Facebook and LinkedIn. And then you can get his masterclass he was talking about at MikeWolfMastery.co/masterclass. That's MikeWolfMastery.co/masterclass. I see there's one coming up today as I record this, and I'm sure there's going to be more in the future. So I'm going to hit yes, save my seat now, because Mike, I think it's time for me to jump on board and find out what the heck you really do and see if I can, see if I can do this too. Thanks for listening. Make sure you subscribe if you haven't already. You can get this on any platform, Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, you name it, it's there. Wherever you get podcasts, you're already hearing it or watching on YouTube. Maybe it's on social media. I don't know, but make sure you subscribe on a podcast and you'll get updates every single week where all we do every week is interview people who are speaking or booking speakers. And we talk about how you can get more gigs and become a bigger, successful speaker. Thanks for listening. Get out there and get on stage. Talk to you soon.